Welcome everybody to another episode of the Blue Skies Dronecast. On this week's episode, we're going to be talking about the A2 Certificate of Competency Self-Declaration. So again, if you're not too aware of this document, maybe you haven't done the A2 course yet, but if you have, hopefully you've read this and you understand it, and we'll just be sort of going through the motions, I suppose, and giving you a bit of revision. But it's all to do with just making sure that everyone is kind of on the same page, okay? So with this episode, obviously we've got Adam joining me as well. So hello Adam, how are you doing?
Yeah, all good. It's nice to be back. It was Matt's obviously now into the fold of the podcast every other week that I'm not on. So yeah, it should be good for people.
That's all right. Yeah, we did have quite a few banked, so it does feel like we haven't done a recording for a while, but it's all the same. It's all familiar, so hopefully we can carry on as normal. So yeah, so like I said, it's all to do with the self-declaration. So we'll just quickly give you an overview for sort of the next kind of 30 minutes, I suppose, really. And hopefully by the end of it, you should all be fairly well versed with kind of what we should all be doing. Basically every time we get our aircraft out and fly it with this certification, really. So Adam, perhaps you just can give us an overview of kind of what this document is, and then we'll just run through each section as it comes, I guess.
Yeah, so as part of the requirements of getting the A2 Certificate of Competency from a recognised assessment entity such as UAV Hub, you have to do a set amount of self-conducted flight training, as it were. It's almost like a self-conducted examination that you have to do. So there's a document that we provide you, and it's within the A2 CFC course, and actually you can find it at help.uavhub.com. so if you go on help.uavhub.com, type in A2 self-declaration, you'll actually find it in the requirements for this self-declaration. And
perfect.
That's it. Cool. All it really is it's kind of like a flight test that you have to do yourself, and it's just you saying to us as your training provider, you know what, I know what I'm doing. I'm pretty confident flying my drone in a specific way. I'm ready for my theory test.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And I guess it's basically pretty sort of, I was going to say, basic, I guess, really, isn't it? You know, it's all kind of stuff that should really be known about before you're attempting to sort of take your education or learning further. So it's all fairly straightforward stuff, and the good thing is it's almost like a checklist, so if you can't do something, you can go away and kind of practice it and be a little bit better or more well versed, and then you can sort of, yeah, put your signature on that document. So that's kind of it. You can treat it as a checklist, which is quite good as well. So obviously, the document starts off in different sections, and section one is basically kind of an overview of what you can essentially do once you have the A2 qualification, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, that's it. So, you know, section one is, you know, operator class C2 drone within its limitations. So obviously, as we're shooting this podcast today, 6th of July, 2022, there aren't any C2 class drones.
No.
So technically, you can't do number one. However, they then put, well, if there's no C2 class drones, then a legacy drone under the A2 transitional provision can be used. So this is the thing. So it's, yeah, this is what 100% of people today are doing, are basically using their legacy drone under the A2 provisions, transitional provisions. Yeah. And this is what it's saying, is you can use that to do the self-declaration.
Yeah. And I imagine they'll probably update that date as and when things potentially might change.
That's it. And if you've listened to some of the previous podcasts, then obviously the transitional provision is due to end on the 31st of December 2022. However, there is a consultation that's happened, and a recommendation has gone forward to the Department for Transport to extend potentially indefinitely the legacy transition period.
That's it, exactly, yeah. So again, we'll make sure we update our students as and when things change with regards to that. So yeah, that's point one, isn't it? It's then talking about point two, and basically making sure you can complete a certain amount of manoeuvres as well, with smoothness and accuracy as well. Exercise good judgment of airmanship as well, and that's something that obviously we go into as we're running through the course itself. And obviously maintaining control of the UAS at all times, even if there are emergencies or something has gone wrong. So it's just basically good airmanship, really, isn't it, Adam? I think basically section one is talking about, and then section two actually then starts talking a little bit more about kind of the regulation side of things, doesn't it, Adam? I think
that's it. So, you know, section two is, you know, when executing the practical self-training, the remote pilot should perform as many flights as they deem necessary to gain a reasonable level of knowledge and the skills to operate the drone. And then it starts the list. So the first paragraph is saying, you know, go out and practice, you know, look at this list, go out and do as many flights as you need to make sure that you, when you do sign the self-declaration, you can put hand on heart and say, yeah, I can do all this.
Yeah, exactly right, yeah. So again, this little section here is actually more like a checklist too. So obviously, before you start, we want to make sure, are we flying in a flight restriction zone? So you need to be able to know how to do that side of things. So again, that's something that's quite important and relatively straightforward, you know, with the DJI app and the FlySafe app as well, actually.
Yeah, so go on dronesafetymap.com via Altitude Angel. Really, really useful, really good. We do talk about it, and we show you that in the A2 course. But you know, if you haven't already, and if you if you've not got the A2 CFC course, check out dronesafetymap.com. Really, really useful.
Yeah. Exactly right, cool. So once that's done, we can then double check that the payload is compatible with the aircraft. And again, most of the time, that'll be quite a simple thing because the payload is always attached to the aircraft. It's, you know, the camera. Not many aircraft these days now have kind of the removable camera side of things. But if it does, make sure that's attached and is working correctly. The next bit then is talking through basically making sure that you're flying in the correct category and you understand what you can do within that category as well. So again, do you want to go through that bit, Adam, or we can...
Yes, so it's basically saying make sure that the drone is suitable flying in the A2 subcategory. So the only drones you can fly in the A2 subcategory are C2 class drones when they're available, legacy drones between 500 grams and 2 kilograms in flying weight. So these are your Mavic Air 2s, your Mavic 3s, your Mavic 2 Pros, those kind of things. And also don't forget you've got the A1 transitional provision, which is drones between 250 grams to 500 grams. So the likes of the original Mavic Air, the DJI Spark, Parrot and Naffy. So very nice. Small drones can be flown in the A1 transitional provision, provided you have an A2 CFC.
That's right. Yeah, brilliant, cool. So once you're happy with all of that, you can then move on. Then it talks about how to do a flight plan. So again, that sounds quite complicated, but essentially it's just basically making sure that you can understand that you need to take off, complete the flight and land safely. I would say that's going kind of a very basic flight plan, obviously making sure that you've checked the flight restriction zones, etc. As well. So that's what they're basically going through there, I would say.
And just making sure that you can, you know, keep the separation distances if required. Yeah. You know what? Under the A2 transitional provision, you need to keep that 50 metres from uninvolved people. So as part of that, really, you know, how do you judge 50 metres? Well, you can't just turn up and go, well, that's roughly 50 metres. You go on Google Maps, you measure out 50 metres from where your flight path is, and you go, well, there's me 50 metres. It's as simple as that. It's just drawing, you know, whether print it out and get a tape measure out or something, you know. It doesn't matter. Just do a basic flight path.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we're basically trying to make sure we plan for if something goes wrong. And if something goes wrong and they say, well, how did you know your distances? If you just have to kind of stumble and think, oh, I just sort of guessed, then that doesn't look great. But if you can bring out a piece of paper or an app on your phone and show them on the map, then it looks like you've actually put some thought into it, which I think is the most important thing. Following on kind of on the same sort of subject then, so if people then stray into your area when you're flying, how will you deal with that? So again, you need to have that in your mind. So normally, it's a case of either going upwards, I guess, really, or moving to the side and just maintaining that separation distance of 50 metres. So again, having that in your head and knowing which way to go if that happens too is a good sort of rule of thumb too. Also, understanding that you want to do some form of basic risk assessment as well. So again, just making sure that we follow kind of the main sort of most important subjects, I suppose, really. And I think we'll start to cover those as we move down this document too. So making sure we know what to do and to mitigate risk as well, and also checking the weather and understanding the weather, precipitation, wind speeds, etc. as well. So it's all stuff that I would say you will be doing every time you fly, whether you realize it or not is another matter. It might kind of happen automatically after a while, but that's essentially the idea, isn't it, Adam? I think
that's it. And you know what, have, whether it's electronically or printed out, just have all these printed out in a little pack or whatever, because they're a part of the self-declaration. So do yourself a little pack, or you know, if you use Google, use something like Google Docs, Google Drive, and just do a little folder, you know, put in your weather, you know, screenshot the weather report, screenshot your risk assessment that you've done for wherever you're flying, you know, and again, your flight path. Those three kind of three main documents are probably worth, you know, just having there, your flight path or flight plan, weather report, whatever weather report tool you use, and your, a basic form of risk assessment.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, that's it. So once that's completed and you're happy, we can then move on to the next section. And that's all to do with basically setting up the aircraft, so getting the aircraft ready to fly. And there's just a few points here just to make sure you understand the basics of setting up an aircraft. So first of all, can you set it up correctly? So again, installing the propellers, battery, making sure the gimbal is secure. So just, again, it's pre-flight checks that really we should always be doing. It's just sort of making it a bit more formal, I suppose, really. So making sure that you can set the aircraft up correctly. Know how to check for the firmware and how to update firmware as well. Again, nowadays it's very easy. You just kind of tap continue, continue, okay, continue, and it sort of just does it. So it's all fairly straightforward. But again, you just need to know that.
That's it. And one thing I will point out, and this is something that was actually picked up on one of our on a flight training with one of our instructors. Use the official DJI, if you are using DJI for that matter. Use the official app. Don't sideload some dodgy third party software, especially if you are just flying. I mean, we're not talking about doing potentially an automated flight. There are kind of other apps for doing that, but if you are just flying, make sure you're just getting the official app for your aircraft, because as we found, some of these kind of really dodgy apps on the App Store or the Google Play Store potentially limit some of the functions of your aircraft, such as compass calibration, IMU calibration. They won't have that in there. So make sure you've got the right app on your phone or controller, and just make sure it's kept up to date along with your firmware.
Yeah, and I think sometimes people do it by accident, because I know I've searched for stuff before and you get flooded with all these other types of apps, and it's quite confusing to actually know, hang on, which one is the real one? Because they make it look like the official one, don't they? Just to try and trick you into probably eventually spending some money on something. But so just make sure you get the official DJI or whatever app for your aircraft. Exactly right, that's it. So the next thing, which is important too, is calibration. So the first one that you probably will all know how to do is to calibrate the compass. They call it the little DJI dance, don't they? So good idea to sort of get familiar with that in case you ever get a warning in the future that means you have to do one. So do the compass calibration correctly. Again, if you're confused by any of this, go on the internet, watch a YouTube video or look at a pre-flight check DJI video or something like that, because it will give you all of this information.
Or read the manual. As much as every man doesn't want to say that, read the manual. At the back of the manual, there's a lot of kind of checklists, I suppose. There's certain lights that happen on your aircraft if the compass is wrong, if the something wrong with the IMU. Usually there are specific lights on the aircraft, and they are listed at the back of the manual of what these lights mean, whether it's gone amber or flashing in a certain way. So it's worth having a read, and actually it's something you should do anyway as part of having your flyer ID. Understand and read the manual.
Exactly, that's it. It's really important. And I think a lot of us do it automatically, but there'll be some people that potentially don't. So it's always good to kind of all be on the same wavelength, I think, is the idea. And then the other one is the IMU calibration. So again, I would do that just to have a go at trying to do an IMU calibration and understand kind of the sort of the nuances of doing it. It's all about putting the aircraft in different orientations. And I would do that inside on a flat surface. That's what we normally teach. That's another one kind of ticked off then. Again, really simple stuff to finish off with then, to know how to check your battery status. So again, be aware of the percentage, and you can tap into that and find some more information if you need to, but that's where it is. It's very simple. Know how to kind of set up a sort of a geo awareness system and how to update that as well. So if you are trying to fly close to no-fly zones and stuff like that, you might want to set yourself kind of a virtual fence to stop the aircraft going any further. So again, more things to have a quick look at in the manual, etc. And know how to set a flight height limitation as well. So again, fairly straightforward. It's a setting, you type it in, and if you know you need to stay below a certain height, you can set it in the app and almost forget it. The drone will stop itself. So again, really basic stuff, but at least now you know, okay, I didn't know that. Some people don't realize, and now you can sign that off and be happy and carry on. So section three, Adam, what have we got here?
Yeah, so section three is about actually flying your drone. So we're getting to the sort of the meat of flying it. So the first one is, it's quite simple. You know how to manually take off. So if you've only ever kind of pushed the automatic takeoff and automatic land button, you need to know how to manually take off. We're talking about kind of the stick actions of taking off. So it's not just pressing a button on your controller, it's putting a certain stick action. Usually DJI, it's obviously going into the corners, either the bottom corners with the sticks, to kind of start the motors. If you've never done that before, again, read the manual, check it out, because it's not just always about pressing auto take off and land.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So again, all of this stuff is really simple, but if you've never done it, you might not know how to do it. And, you know, I have come across that on flight tests before with people actually too, which is interesting. And then we just need to demonstrate some really simple flight maneuvers. So hovering the aircraft to start with, make sure you can do that. Again, really simple. It almost does it itself, but be aware that obviously in different orientations, your stick movements are different. So just be aware of that. Performing coordinated large turns as well. So nice smooth turns in the sky is what we like to see. So just basically really fine stick movements is the idea.
Yeah, we're probably looking at kind of circuits for that. I am with sort of, you know,
yeah,
nice circuits, circuits in different directions. So nothing too complicated for that. Just make sure you can do a nice track.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, maybe some figures of eight as well, if you're feeling brave, potentially. Then we want some tighter turns as well. So maybe just shrink down your ovals or your figures of eight and just do them a little bit more tightly as well. So again, it's all good practice. Again, flying straight at a constant altitude as well. Again, that's fairly straightforward. It should almost do that itself. But again, you can obviously tweak the altitude depending on what's happening with the throttle stick if you need to. Change direction, height and speed. Again, all stuff that you'll probably be doing automatically, to be honest, as well. So really simple. Follow a path as well. So maybe set out either follow something on the ground or have a look at a tree in the distance and try and track towards that tree in a straight line, just to again prove that you can do that, I would say too. Again, making sure that now you can understand how to control the aircraft as it's facing you as well. So as you're flying back to yourself, this is when it gets a little bit harder because everything is backwards. So just double check yourself on that side of things and just understand that you need to do the opposite of what you think when you're flying back to yourself. Okay, so that's a really important one. That's normally where things start to fall apart with people as well, unfortunately, too. Again, we want to make sure that we can fly the aircraft as safely as possible. And the next one is also talking about fixed wing as well. So there's just another sentence there talking about making sure you can fly a fixed wing in a horizontal plane and keeping the altitude stable as well.
I will just kind of reiterate that if you don't fly fixed wing, you know, don't worry that you aren't able to kind of tick off that point. Just if you do fly fixed wing, you should be able to do this. But, you know, if you don't fly fixed wing, don't worry, you can continue with the self-declaration.
Yeah, exactly right. That's perfect, yeah. So, Adam, let's carry on with those ones, shall we, a little bit?
Okay, so, as you know how to keep the drone outside no-fly zones or restricted zones unless holding an authorization. So we've kind of already checked this, so we should know how to check whether we're in a flight restriction zone. Now, if we want to fly within the flight restriction zone, obviously we need permission, authorization to be in there. So, you know, it's about potentially checking with NATS to get permission or potentially calling the airfield up to get permission. It might be in an email, written permission. So it's just thinking about that and making sure you've got that in writing. Because if, heaven forbid, anything goes wrong, you know, you'll need that for insurance purposes.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And most of the time, the aircraft won't actually fly into those zones anyway unless you've unlocked it. So it kind of almost takes care of itself. I think this document is basically sort of for all different types of aircraft that maybe don't have that automatic kind of geofencing and stuff like that. So again, it sort of talks about that in a bit more detail. But DJI aircraft are very good in that respect, which is good. Again, using external references to maybe judge height and distance is always useful as well. Something that we used to talk about, you know, on the course as well. So using certain types of trees or, you know, a fence line or something will help you with that type of thing too. So again, just extra stuff to help you fly safely. Can you perform the return to home as well? So again, it sounds easy, but if you've never tried it, it is a bit of a worrying moment when you press that button to start with, and it does do a very good job, but it does go up to a height and then fly back, and you need to just be aware of kind of what it does so you're not spooked if you ever have to do it in an emergency as well. Yeah, Adam.
Yeah, and program in your return to home functions, because obviously if you've never looked at what the height is set for return to home, let's say it's set to 30 meters, let's say, but in the flight path there might be a building that's say 40 meters or 50 meters. Well, the drone's just gonna, if it's got no collision avoidance, go straight into it. So you know, it's about just making sure that, you know, you've set it to a correct or appropriate height, making sure that whatever the return to home is set to is what you want it to do. You know, if you want it to return to where home was originally set, make sure it's doing that and not doing something else which might be land in position. Yeah. Possibly. Most of the time it will just return to where it took off from, but, you know, double check that. If you've never looked at it before, have a look at the return to home function on your aircraft.
Mm. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And obviously don't forget you can also fly it back manually as well. If that's what you prefer, then know how to do that. And sometimes it might be quicker to do that manually than to actually let the aircraft do it itself. So either way, make sure you can get the aircraft back. Know how to land safely as well. Again, really simple, but it's very important to be able to land the aircraft. And a lot of people sometimes get this wrong when they do a manual landing, is when the aircraft gets to the ground and they turn the propellers off, they actually put the sticks into both corners. And that's not actually how you should do it. When you land, you have to hold the throttle down, and that's the only stick you need. If you put it into the corners, it will turn the blades off, but sometimes it'll also give it some weird inputs and it might actually disturb the aircraft if it's not on the ground, and it might then flip over. So sticks into the corners to take off, but throttle down to turn the blades off. So again, a little quirk there of the aircraft. I think it should be the same to take off or land, but hey, that's DJI sometimes, isn't it? A couple of fixed wing drone ones as well. Again, don't worry if you can't do these. Make sure you can get the aircraft back and landed safely as well. And also make sure you can maintain sufficient separation from obstacles as well. So again, fairly straightforward there, which is good. So hopefully section 3 can be ticked off too, which is nice. Then we've got section 4 as well, which is the last section. And this is all to do with reacting to sort of abnormal situations, I suppose, really, too. So the first one is fairly sort of not overly detailed, but you can manage the drone's flight path in abnormal situations. So they don't necessarily list what they are, but you might have to make up your own. But I guess being distracted, stuff like that, it's, you know, making sure that you've got full situational awareness, I suppose, is a nice way of putting it as well. The next one talks about GPS as well. So if you lose GPS, hopefully you'll know what happens. You can't really simulate this very easily, but essentially you'll be flying in non-GPS mode, which is difficult. And I think it's basically just to make sure that you're happy with that if it were to happen. It's I acknowledge, I suppose, isn't it, Adam, potentially?
Yeah, it's a weird one. It's something that we've kind of banged on this about before. You know, it will drop into what is called ATTI mode, attitude mode, where the aircraft will drift with the wind.
Yeah.
So it won't hold itself steady because it hasn't got the GPS locked, so it will potentially just drift with the wind. So if that happens, you lose the GPS and it is airborne, obviously you've got to be able to control that. And if it's the first time it's ever happened to you, and you've never flown in ATTI mode before, it can be quite frightening because obviously you've got to think about extra inputs to compensate for the wind. On those situations, you know, it might be just potentially just landing the aircraft if it's safe to do so. Just try again. Obviously, your return to home won't work if the GPS is lost because it doesn't know where home is. So, you know, I'd say in this situation, if you know you've lost GPS and you are airborne and it's safe to do so, I would personally say try to land it if it is safe. If it's not safe to do so, try and control the aircraft and get it to an area that is sterilized and safe, and then land it rather than continuing the flight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think the best way, and it's the way we've always kind of taught really to get happy with flying an aircraft in non-GPS, is just to buy a small cheap toy drone to try, and then you'll get a sense of how difficult it really is. And if you put the time in, then actually if you ever do lose GPS, it will be a non-event really, because you'll have that kind of muscle memory. So that's always a good tip as well. 20, 30 quid on Amazon, something like that.
And I think it's worth just pointing out, I think you guys taught, you and Matt talked about this on last week's episode about buying a drone to just fly in the house, you know, a cheap small one, and just practice but until you get that muscle memory. So when something does happen, when the proverbial poo hits the fan, you can then, you know, react.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, it's all about preparing yourself for the worst case scenario, isn't it, basically, as well. Yeah, that's it. Next one then, we've kind of already gone through this already, but again, if someone moves into your area, you have a public incursion, what are you going to do? Are you going to move the drone left, right, up or down? Be aware that there is a safety distance and have in your head what you'll need to do in that location, potentially. And it's always good to have a look around too. Where will people probably come from? If there's a gate, is there a footpath? You can work out where you'll go then with the drone. You see, that's the idea. Again, making sure that we can react and manage the exit from the operation zone as defined during the flight preparation. So again, same sort of thing there, I think, too. Making sure that we can, if there's a danger or something happens in the area, we know how to actually exit exit that area and maybe fly to a holding position or something like that, I guess, really. That's Adam, do you reckon?
Yeah, so it's about kind of thinking one step above. So it's like, you know, okay, yeah, you've planned everything out. This is where I'm flying. This is where I'm going. Well, actually, if something does happen in that area, if that area suddenly becomes unsterilized, well, what's your backup plan? Where are you going to land that drone? If you're in, relatively busy area, do you have, is there another area that you can dump the drone? Or is that even going to be a worse kind of decision than landing it where you are? You know, you're going to have to think 2, 3, 4 steps ahead if something goes wrong, because when something does happen, you won't have time potentially to make the best decision if you've not thought about it in advance.
No, exactly right. Yeah, that's it. It's all about preparation, isn't it? Exactly, yeah. The next two then, talking about incursion of either a manned aircraft or an unmanned aircraft. So again, if a full-size aircraft is in the vicinity, what are you going to do then? So chances are you're probably going to descend. That's what we always teach. That's probably the easiest thing to do, is just your left stick down and you should get out the way of any type of manned aircraft in theory. If there's another unmanned aircraft though, that might be slightly different, slightly smaller, coming from a different direction, probably much lower. So again, treat it like a person, probably, you know, avoid the other aircraft. There isn't technically a set distance, but I would say it's best just to bring the aircraft down and land and just see what then happens. It's easier to give way to something than to kind of think, well, I'm going to fly here and that can move out the way instead, because they might have not seen this self-declaration and they might not be as skilled or as experienced as yourselves as well. So that's always a good plan as well. So have that in the back of your mind as well. And again, same sort of thing as we've spoken about before. If you do lose maybe GPS or you lose your screen feed to your transmitter, what are you going to do then? So again, I think, like Adam was sort of saying before, the simplest option is to actually check where the aircraft is and just bring the throttle down and land the aircraft, because otherwise you might make something worse. So again, unless you can control it properly, I would just say land the aircraft and have a good idea as to where that's going to be, and can you make the aircraft fly there or just come down in situ, I suppose, as well. So that's that one too. And then lastly, it actually talks about how to do a briefing, a debrief, and giving feedback. So to people that maybe you're working with, or getting people involved with what you're doing as well. And we talk about that a bit more on the course. So perhaps, Adam, you can just sort of finish off with that last little bit maybe.
Yeah, so obviously when you're doing a briefing, it's about kind of giving this, you know, a very brief safety briefing to anybody that's working with you, or with you, whether it's friends. You know, they might have, you know, if you're demonstrating to your friends that have never kind of seen a drone before, it's worth just giving them a quick safety briefing. It could be as simple as, you know, just, you know, listen to any instructions I have. If I say, you know, drone fail, it means something's going wrong. I potentially haven't got control of the aircraft.
Yeah.
Keep your eyes on it and keep away. You know, it might be just as simple as, you know, don't touch the blades. You know, some people might just want to go and, like, oh, look at how fat you are. Isn't that cool? You know, it might be just telling them, don't go near it. Stay behind me while I'm flying this. You know, things like that, just to get them involved with you. Again, a debrief at the end. Again, it sounds quite formal. You know, they have to kind of debrief your people afterwards. But, you know, it's about kind of thinking about the flight, you know, what went wrong, what could I do better next time. You know, the debrief might actually just be with yourself rather than, you know, debriefing your friend. You know, it could be just you going through, oh, actually, that I did fly a little bit too close to those people. I did fly a bit too close to that tree then. Next time, I need to make sure I turn on my obstacle avoidance. I might get a drone with obstacle avoidance if I haven't got one already, or I need to rethink about that in my flight plan. You know, it's just thinking about what could have gone wrong. What can I do better next time?
Yeah, exactly. Pretty straightforward stuff. And you'll probably think about that automatically anyway, really, especially if you've got disorientated and you've lost sight of the drone, you know, keep it closer to you, stuff like that. You know, it's all obvious stuff, hopefully. But if it's listed, hopefully it'll be in your mind as well. And also, there's any type of reporting that you might want to do too. So again, if there was an accident with the aircraft, or if there was an aircraft incursion that was super, super close, then obviously there's reports that you can fill in if necessary as well. So it's just knowing that final procedure at the end of your flight as well. That's pretty much it, isn't it, Adam?
That's it. And don't forget those, you know, a lot of this is taught within the A2CFC course. So actually, by the time you get to this point in the A2CFC course, the only thing really you should have needed to kind of go out and do is the actual flights itself, you know, making sure that you can fly safely. In terms of, you know, flight plans, in terms of the reports, you know, ECAIRs and the AirProx reports, They're all covered in the A2C of Z course. They're covered in module one. So, you know, this shouldn't be anything unfamiliar to you if you are doing the UAV Hub A2 certificate competency course. We can't speak for other companies' courses because, you know, we don't know what they have within their syllabus. There is certain, you know, they do have to talk about the mandatory occurrence support, the MORS, within the A2 CFC course, but things like air procs potentially not. So, just be aware of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and hopefully if you've completed the course, like Adam said, and you've gone out and flown, it all should be fairly straightforward to kind of put your signature on the bottom and send it in to us to sort of move on with the actual learning and the course itself. One thing that we'll probably just slip in here just before we kind of sign off is if you aren't happy with any of these bullet points that we've talked about, especially with regards to the actual practical flying, then we offer flight training now, Adam, don't we?
That's it. So yeah, if it is that, you know, whether you're a complete newbie or whether you are an experienced operator that just wants some professional guidance, you know, you might have some bad habits you're not aware of, you can book flight training with UAV Hub with one of our instructors, instructor examiners, and they'll go through this. You know, if you tell them, you know what, I want to go through the self-declaration, I want to run through everything, great. You know, they will do that. They will tailor the training to your requirements. So it's listed on the UAV Hub website as DJI Basic Flight Training. So it is primarily aimed at people who have DJI aircraft. If you have an aircraft that falls outside that, do get in contact with us first, because, you know, if it's a cheap drone from Amazon, it might be that we potentially won't, because we're not familiar with the ins and outs of the aircraft. If it's, you know, potentially like a Parrot aircraft, we might be like, okay, yeah, no worries, our guys know the ins and outs of that. But, you know, our instructors, you know, are very experienced, but they don't know the ins and outs of all drones. You know, we can't always go through absolutely everything within the flight controller app.
You know, that's it.
We are very experienced in the DJI app. You know, we've all our guys are very experienced with that. But outside of that, it might depend on the individual instructor whether they have the experience or not. And they will obviously do their best to make sure that they, you know, read up on anything outside of the scope of what they know. But it's primarily aimed at people who fly a DJI aircraft.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, but if it's just purely flying skills and experience, then that should be hopefully fairly similar across the board, actually. So again, the good thing is we can kind of tailor that depending on what you kind of need. It's essentially your sort of hour and a half or so, isn't it, really? And you can kind of take away whatever you need from that side of things. So definitely check the website on that side of things and book in if you need to. And that takes us quite nicely to the end of this episode, Adam. So thank you very much. Hopefully now everyone is very much more kind of understanding of the declaration and what needs to be done. Again, obviously, Adam's mentioned you can search for this online if you need to, or it's within the A2 course as well. So thanks again, Adam. Nice to have you back again. We'll see you in a couple of weeks, I guess.
Cheers, Tom. Yeah, we'll catch you in 2 weeks' time.
Brilliant. Cool. That's it. Exactly. And as I always say, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. That way it'll then appear in your podcast app every Wednesday morning as well. Tell a friend if you haven't already. And also, if you could review the podcast as well, that always helps us out as well. So thanks very much. And we'll see you very soon. Fly safe from blue skies, everyone.